Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Good morning. Happy Monday. It's Pro Football Talk Live. Chris Sims, Mike Florio here with you for the next 2 hours. And with that, I say good morning, Christopher.
Hello.
You were working.
Hello.
You were working very diligently on your phone.
Well, because like the new, you know, the login SSO ID, let me get on the internet here in the building because I do a job that, you know, consists of the internet. I delayed that last week, and now I'm in the building, and now I can't connect to the internet. So I'm trying to give a new ID, a new code word. I can't use any of the code words I used for the last 12 times doing this, which is like, you know, 5 years worth of codes, right? So I keep putting one in, and they keep telling me, you've used that before. You've used this before. So right now I'm just flying solo, and I have no internet, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Are we entirely sure you haven't been fired?
No, we're not. No, nobody called me to tell me. I wish they would have. If that was the case, I could have got some extra sleep instead of coming in here trying to figure this out.
I have all sorts of weird dreams that are amalgamations of all the things that happen in my life and the things I think of and the things I used to do. And I think at some point in the not too distant past, I had some sort of a stress dream that involved one or both of us getting fired. Maybe it was a premonition. I don't know. We'll find out at some point in the next 2 hours. It would be great, though, not for you to be fired, but if you've already been fired, if that die has already been cast and there's nothing I can do about it, it would be great if they would come in and like drag you out on camera. That would probably get a few views on YouTube.
Thank you. I appreciate that. No, that's not going to happen. I think I'm supposed to be here. Nobody's told me that. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. I can't see the rundown. I mean, I know the rundown. I'm hoping I can kind of figure this out as I sit here and talk to you and slowly punch in a code or whatever and kind of multitask, which I hate doing because that's not what I like to do. But I'm going to try to make it work, man. So, but how was your weekend? Your weekend good? You doing good otherwise?
I'll be your tour guide through what we're going to do over the next 2 hours. Don't worry about it. I'll keep you on track.
Thank you. I'll keep you honest.
I'll keep you, you know, in the right topic. Yeah, it was a good weekend. It was one of those weekends where, you know, we're in the calm before the storm with the draft coming only 10 days until the draft. I fully expect the counter to be up now that I've figured out which way to point without having to look.
Boom.
It's down there somewhere. Oh, look at that. Well, how about $1 million while we're at it? I mean, come on. If we're going to move that quickly, let's go. How about candy bars falling from the sky? Let's go. All right. Anyway, it was a nice, relaxing weekend down in my barn. Yesterday was a perfect day to sit in the barn, put golf on one TV,
yeah,
UFL football on the other, because I really don't care about any of the other sports, open the door, got screen doors in the barn. And there aren't many times over the course of a year that the screen door is the appropriate thing to use because it's always either too hot or too cold, and we have a heating and cooling system in the barn now. But yesterday was a great day.
Oh, it was.
To pop the door open and have the screen and just relax and do all sorts of different things, a little work, a little reading, a little watch the golf, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So it was a good afternoon. It was just one of those, like, when you become aware in the moment, this is kind of a pretty good day. That's a pretty good day.
That it is a good day. I hear that. I was around the same type of thing. Couldn't have been a better, you know. First off, went Saturday night, watched the UFC fights for the most part. I think I missed the last two because I fell asleep. It was too late how it all started. That was cool. But then Saturday, beautiful day, right? We finally got one here in the Northeast where it's been cold and rainy. Did doubleheader Suns baseball game, right, which was enjoyable being outside. Then got home, and a lot like you, got to sit on the couch, was in the barn, opened the big sliding doors there, and enjoyed a nice spring day. And I always say, hey, Sunday at the Masters is one of my favorites. It's kind of the unofficial kickoff of the spring to me. There's just something about it, the way that course looks, the flowers, all that. And then add Scottie Scheffler on there right now, the champion of the Masters, who's, you know, on a special run right now. It was cool to watch. It was cool to watch yesterday.
I watched most of it through the afternoon, but then I had to go pick up dinner. And, you know, I've rediscovered my taste for steak after having steak overdose in Indianapolis. So got a steak from the little restaurant down the street, and it was pretty damn good. So
I like it. All right.
I kept up with it on my phone. He pulled away in the end. It looked like it was going to be down to the wire. And I think they do like extra holes at the Masters. It's the U.S. Open where if there's a tie, they do an entire extra round, which makes no sense whatsoever. But I thought it was heading that way. And when I realized it wasn't, I didn't feel bad about missing. And I had my moment in the afternoon, had a nice dinner, was productive last night. It's just a good couple of days. And, you know, as much as I love football season, I love the action, I love watching the games, I love everything about it, man, it's nice to have weekends. It's nice to have Saturday and Sunday. It's nice to not be traveling on Saturday. It's nice to be home Sunday, not 18 hours locked in all day long. It's rewarding. It's fun. I enjoy the games, but it's just not, it's a nice balance. It's a nice balance. I can work harder during football season when I have this stretch where I can actually feel like I'm normal. Other than the fact that I'm inherently abnormal, I like the fact that I can pretend to be normal for a couple of days every weekend. That's nice, and I'll never take that for granted. By the way.
Yeah, by the way,
UFC,
what?
UFC 300. You mentioned you watched the UFC fights. I didn't know you were into that. There was a time when I was really into that,
right,
6, 7, 8 years ago. And then I just realized, like, there was one particularly graphic and brutal fight that reminded me of the movie Carrie from the 70s, which I think they remade a few years ago.
Not sure if I know that one.
Well, it involves a bucket of pig blood landing on Sissy Spacek in her first major role. It was a Stephen King, almost said Peter King, Stephen King book.
Gotcha.
One of his first ones, his first big hit. Anyway, just blood everywhere. Just nasty. And the level of brutality in UFC is over the top. And it's amazing to me that people clutch pearls about football when UFC is absolutely, positively the most graphically brutal sport that you can watch. And I don't understand the dichotomy. And I got to the point where it's like, I can't do this. I can't do 7 concussions on the way to the ground before the referee flies in, literally throws himself on top of the vanquished opponent who has been banged in the head 7 times on the way to the ground.
I hear you.
So
I hear you.
I can't. I can't do it. Lost my taste for it.
It's brutal. I'm with you there. It really is. The one thing is, I think what changed me, Mike, is I got a chance to be around a few of those guys, and I realized how much they love it. And that, you know, kind of like we talk about sometimes, they sign up for it. There's a real passion for it. So I know it's brutal, and I'm with you. I'm with you all the way there. But being around it a little bit and seeing what these guys, they want to fight. This is what they do, and this is how they earn a living, and they don't back down from it. So If they're willing to do that and be at peace with it, then it helped me become at peace with it a little bit more watching. But I'm with you in the fact that I went to one UFC event once in my life, sat in the second row. And the first fight I was...
Don't wear white.
Oh.
Don't wear white.
The first fight I was there, right? You're sitting there and you're, oh, this is awesome, right? I mean, they're going at it right there. And I mean, within a few minutes of the fight, one guy's nose is over on the right side of his cheek, right? And I'm like, oh my gosh. And he keeps getting punched on it. And he just is like sucking it up. And I mean, it's blood everywhere. And I'm like, literally, my hands are over my eyes, and I look at my wife, and I go, you okay? And her mouth is wide open, like, in amazement. And she goes, yeah, this is awesome. And I was like, oh, okay, all right, so you're okay. I'm the one that's scared here. And, yeah, that's my wife for you right there.
She saw her fantasies of what she'd like to do
somebody
to
do to me,
life.
Right.
That's why she
exactly.
enjoyed it.
Exactly.
I mean, they're modern-day gladiators. If you threw swords in there, they would use them and not think twice about it. There would be heads rolling around. I'm serious. I mean, there is a level of intensity and brutality that is unmatched by any other sport, and people go nuts about football being brutal. And I think if UFC, like, there's a tipping point where it will become sufficiently popular that people will notice and say, what in the hell is this? And how have we allowed this to go on for as long as we have? And it's found a groove where it's popular, but not too popular.
Yes, right.
Like football's too popular for its own good.
Right.
And I think if UFC ever got there, I mean, maybe the thing that's keeping it from getting there is the inherent brutality, but if it ever got there, then the spotlight would be on it. And they'd be like, well, we need to find a way to, you know, end the fight without the person getting seven concussions on the way to the ground, because they're just wired to not stop until they're told to stop.
Yeah,
and you
that's
just
right.
keep pounding and pounding and pounding and pounding. And look, there's an appetite for that. And this underscores something I have believed for many years now. And I continue to be surprised, pleasantly surprised, but surprised that no one has done it. With all these really rich people out there that maybe want to get into the NFL and there isn't a team available, and maybe the Saudis could bankroll this, I don't know. But I fully expect, have expected, and maybe at this point I don't anymore because it hasn't happened yet, but I keep thinking the NFL's biggest threat is if somebody says, I got $10, $15 billion to invest in a professional football league that will play in the fall on weekends and will dial the clock back to 1985. And we're just going to go out there and we're going to go UFC football. We're going to play football like it used to be played. And everybody who plays will have signed up for it. All the paperwork will be properly executed. And we're going to play it like they used to play it. And if you don't like it, don't watch it. But if you like it, step right up. Because there's a segment of the population that would fall all over itself to watch football the way that it was played back when they were throwing your dad around on green cement.
Yeah, no, I mean, I hear that. If they want to, you know, again, try to be different, try to differentiate themselves, they could do that, go the more brutality route. And I do think that'd open up some eyes for sure. You know, now does it get to the point again where it's become such a great public thing that it crosses over into the mainstream like football? I don't know about that. That's where football has found the magic line there. I mean, it is on basic cable. It's on, you know, NBC and ABC. So hey, people they want tough and physical, but they don't want crazy brutal. And like we always talk about, like, yeah, that'd be cool. Still want to see people that are talented doing it. I don't necessarily just want to see, oh, just because this guy can, you know, hit a receiver hard over the middle, I'm going to tune in to watch that. I don't know about that either. So, yeah, there's some interesting things. But you're right. I mean, that UFC fan base is what it is. It was UFC 300, so it brought a guy like me over there for that one. Every now and then, I'm a kind of, ooh, I'm over there for UFC. This one intrigues me, and I'll tune in. But it's I don't see it going mainstream for the reasons you're talking about.
I'll just say this. There is 30 to 35% of the population that is currently fans of the National Football League that might flock to something like old school football. And I'm referring to a segment whose leader currently has a competition on his docket unrelated to football. But I feel like that would be a very easy thing to do. There was a lengthy article in Sports Illustrated 7-8 years ago that focused on football in America, and it became clear that there is a subset that misses, relishes, and would embrace the way that football used to be played, even though the NFL has evolved past that. I'm just saying that would be the biggest threat to the NFL, is to have a professional football league that plays the way the NFL used to play, because I think the NFL would risk immediately losing. If they competed head-to-head with the NFL, if they had the funding, it would risk immediately losing a significant percentage of its fan base to whatever they would call it, old-school football. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. And the only reason it's not on that, it's not on the run. You're not missing that on the rundown today. We deviated.
I'm good. I got connected. I figured it all out. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. So yeah, I
news flash. Chris hasn't been fired.
I got it done. I did. I've changed my password and put in a new login, so now I can get on the internet. Here's another one of my pet peeves of this weekend. Okay. One more thing before we start. Did you know Tiger Woods played in the Masters this weekend? In fact, I thought he won the tournament until like the last 10 minutes of the tournament yesterday. Did you know that? I mean, did you see that? I mean, you were following on your phone.
The red shirt and the black pants.
Right. I'm sure you were following on your phone. So that's all they talked about on the phone. You couldn't see the guys that are actually good at the sport right now. I mean, what the hell is that with golf and that? Like, I go on ESPN.com, you know, golf. It's just, it's Tiger, Tiger, Tiger. I'm going, wait, he's in dead last, like, by 3 strokes. It's not even close. Why do we care about what he's doing so much? Hey, cool, give me an update once, whatever. But that drove me crazy this weekend. That I did not understand. Why? We're at a time where they finally have a guy that's reaching Tiger-ish type of heights here with dominating the sport, and they're going to show a guy that hasn't been good in 15 years. Like, I just don't understand that. But I am glad the PGA Tour member won. That was cool, because I don't want to see the LIV golfers and the Saudis win anything. That's for sure.
Wow, that's a right turn that opens a whole new can of worms. But yeah, the Tiger Woods nostalgia I think makes sense, because that created an explosion of interest in the sport. It caused a lot of people to take up golf, to play golf. All the public
I get that
were crowded weekend because of Tiger Woods, and right. I think there's this wistfulness, this idea that maybe he can
somehow get back,
recapture, and finally get to whatever the magic number of major championships was, that it felt like it was inevitable he would reach until it wasn't inevitable. And right now he's just kind of hanging around and doing his thing, and I assume he's going to be eligible for the senior tour here at some point. He can go be the king of the senior tour, which I think they still have. Yeah. I don't follow it closely enough, but I think there's a senior tour.
I'm not even sure anymore, myself.
It's not like the money's dried up. I mean, it's just not as big of a deal. It's not televised to the same extent, but it's golf. You can play until you drop dead. So,
that should be their new motto. Hey, it's golf. Play until you drop dead. Sign up tomorrow at your local golf club.
Maybe we can mix golf and UFC together. Although with the golf clubs, somebody definitely would kill someone else. And there's a Jack Nicholson joke in there somewhere that I will pass on, along with any other potential, you know, for humor when it comes to somebody being chased around with a golf club.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
We've established that Chris hasn't been fired. T. Higgins, the Bengals receiver, would like to be fired. He'd like to be free. He'd like to be gone. Here he is from his youth football camp over the weekend on the simple question of whether he anticipates playing for the Cincinnati Bengals in 2024.
I do anticipate it. You know, since he's growing up, you know, I love for Cincy that I didn't think I would, but, man, looking forward to it.
T. Higgins expects to be playing for the Bengals this year. And look, I think he's just acknowledging reality. The word was put out there weeks ago that he'd like to be traded. He asked to be traded. He wants to be traded. You know what happened after that was done? Nobody called. Because nobody wants to give the Bengals whatever they're going to want, whatever they have to offer Mike Brown to pry him away and then pay him a crap load of money on top of it. So at some point, you accept reality. Anger, denial, bargaining, depression, acceptance. He's accepted. He's going to be on the Bengals this year, and he's either going to make 21-8 under the franchise tag, or he's going to parlay that into a long-term deal. But the bottom line is he's going to get – he wasn't a first-round pick. He hasn't gotten a huge pile of money in his career. He's getting $21.8 million this year. Should he get more? Yes. Should the Bengals sign him long-term? Yes. Should they trade him to someone who will if they're not going to? Yes, but they don't have to, and they're not going to. So he gets 21-8, and we see what happens next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very similar conversation to what we had last week multiple times, right? It's the Brandon Ayuk, CeeDee Lamb conversation once again, right? I think teams are starting to learn a little bit of like, wait, let's stop negotiating against ourselves and just throwing people money just because, oh, we drafted him. We liked him. We like him. He's done well, and now he's due. So we're just going to make him next and one up the last guy, right? I feel like we're seeing a little bit of a change there in the guard as far as the NFL, a little bit going like, wait, just because you're good and we drafted you and you're next doesn't mean you just get to be next and become the highest paid guy. That's done. I think we'll see. But I know I can look back at quarterback contracts, wide receiver contracts and things and go, damn, it looks like the team negotiated against themselves and just kept raising the price on themselves. Like, hey, I'll give you 22. No, I changed my mind. I'll give you 23. And it's like, well, we didn't even ask for more. I don't care. So that's where I think it is interesting as we look at this. And like to your point with the what you said, you're exactly right. You know, if it was, ooh, T. Higgins is so great and such a need, the phone would be ringing off the hook for, hey, let's get something done. I'll give you a trade compensation. We know we got to pay him. We got to do that. He's kind of in a tough spot right now where he is, and especially with the Bengals and somebody at his position who we know is going to be paid one of the two or three top, you know, receivers in football. So I feel bad for T. Higgins. I do want him to get more money. But, you know, honestly, 21-8 for where he is probably more than what he could get. And when you break down the receiver contracts, what they actually are, like you did in your article this weekend, which I thought was awesome, right? I mean, I think that's more than he gets probably on the open market. So that's maybe one silver lining for the whole thing.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I pulled up these numbers, and it really is jarring.
Now, yeah, it's great,
future
Mike.
Contracts are going to have that same fluff built into them,
sure.
But it helps put everything in perspective. Tyreek Hill, it's not a $30 million per year contract, in large part because the final year, $45 million, fully fake and phony, aimed at driving up the new money average. It's a four-year deal worth $23.8 million per year. That's what he signed when he went to the Dolphins. I keep getting pushback about, it's an extension. He was under contract for another year. Yeah, but they took it and they ripped it up and they replaced it with a new deal. And the deal they replaced it with is 4 years, $23.8 million per year, period. The old deal doesn't matter anymore. It's a new contract. It doesn't say the extension activates after the current deal ends. The old deal is gone. A new deal is in its place. And it drives me crazy when I get these arguments. And it's all about pumping up the numbers so the agents can go around and say, I negotiated a $30 million per year contract for Tyreek Hill. You should hire me to represent you. It's so transparent. And it presumes a level of ignorance on the part of the people that they're trying to recruit, that they aren't smart enough to figure this out. That it just drives me crazy. They think we're all stupid. They think their clients are stupid. They think everybody's too stupid to figure out that there's a bunch of phony baloney BS in the back end of these contracts that drive up the number. So 23.8 for Tyreek Hill. Devontae Adams, 28 million. Nope. 22.5. 22.5. Still, you know, no need for a bake sale for Devontae Adams, but 22.5, far cry from 22.8. That's $5.5 million less per year, every year, than what they've led us to believe it is. Cooper Kupp, 26.7? No, 21.97. Again, that's the way it is. When in Rome, that's what happens. But as I worked through all these deals, I realized the best ones, Chris, are the most recent ones.
Exactly.
Michael Pittman.
Yeah.
Michael Pittman. 3 years, 70.
Wow.
23.3. 23.3. A real 23.3.
Right.
In comparison to Devontae Adams, 22.5. Tyreek Hill, 23.8. Here's Michael Pittman with a 3-year commitment in his prime. 3 years, not four, not five.
Right.
Not back ends that he can't get away from. 3 years, 70, and he'll be right back at the table again. That's a great deal for him.
That was eye popping when I saw you write that in the article. That really was. Well, give me some other ones. There was another one or two that were great.
Calvin
deals.
Ridley.
Yeah, exactly.
Calvin
right.
Ridley, right. A real $23 million per year. And if they cut him after 2 years, he will have made $48 million in 2 years, and then he's gone again. And Stephon Diggs has the best gig of all of them. He's getting 22.5, and he'll be a free agent again next year. He's getting 22.5 in cash right now, and he can hit the market next year. So maybe T. Higgins, I don't know, maybe he had an epiphany. 21.8.
That's
and then
what I'm saying.
The Bengals probably won't give me a 20% raise over that to keep me around next year.
Right.
21.8 and I become a free agent. When I consider what these other deals are truly worth,
right.
I'll take that 21.8.
I think so. You know, I think that's where, and again, he's, you know, being around T. Higgins a few times in my life, right? He's not maybe, for lack of a better way to say it, as diva-ish maybe as other receivers, a little more low-key and chill, if you may. And I don't mean that to be disrespectful to other receivers. I say that knowing that they're awesome and that they want the ball and they should get the ball more. He just doesn't have that same way about him there. So, yeah, it seems like he is accepting. And probably because of all the things we talked about. Like you said, he was the first pick of the second round. He never saw that first-round type of money here. So this is big, still life-changing money for him, and hopefully he can go out and have a big year and set himself up to whether he can make the Bengals and put the squeeze on them to get extra money, or he hits, you know, free agency. But yeah, like you said in the article, it's not bad, especially for what that amount of money is for T. Higgins, who's been, hey, we know he's kind of a middle low tier number one. He's a number two on the Bengals, of course, because of Chase. It's still a pretty good price tag for what he is right now.
I'm going to go out of order slightly here because you made a great point. First pick in round two.
Yeah.
It's always better to be the first pick in round two than clearly the last pick in round one. Maybe the next to last after that. I don't know. There's a break-even point somewhere in round one where it's better to just not be picked in round one. Somewhere between 20 and 32, you're better off being 33. Here's why. This year, T. Higgins, under the franchise tag, is making $21.8 million. Brandon Ayuk, who was drafted 8 spots ahead of T. Higgins in the first round,
right,
fifth-year option at 14.1.
Right.
He's making $7 million less, and he got drafted 8 spots higher.
Right.
What's wrong with this picture, NFL and NFL Players Association, where you have guys who were taken beyond round one who don't have this fallback of franchise tag money when they get to year five? And the union agreed to it. The union agreed to it years ago. And, hey, there was a time when they'd squeeze first-round picks to sign 6-year contracts.
Yeah,
I remember the Patriots and Ben Watson 20 years ago in a big fight over a 6-year contract. At least you can't lock up a first-rounder for 6 years under contract. But there's something wrong with this picture that Ayuk is at 14-1, Higgins is at 21-8. And Ayuk was drafted 8 spots higher.
Yeah, no, that doesn't make sense, right? I mean, you know, hey, you're more talented. Hey, the league views you as more talented. Hey, you're really great. Actually, it would have been better for you to not be so great. and then you would have made more money. That when you say that out loud, that goes into the category of like, say that out loud and listen back to yourself, NFLPA, next time you throw that out there. You're right. It's back ass words is what it is. Or what did I just do that?
Ass backwards. Ass backwards. Bass backwards. Bass backwards is the next level way of saying ass backwards.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Literal.
Literal.
Bass backwards.
Literal. That's the problem there. But again, you know, it's good for the Bengals to have this tool, as we talk about. It does give them one more year to figure it out. And, of course, we know they're a team that we look at and we go, they're in the Super Bowl window. And I understand them using all their tools that are available to them to keep the band together here for as long as they possibly can.
All right, now I'm going to go back out of order, back to what I was supposed to talk about on keeping the band together and what the Bengals can do as it relates to the rest of the AFC. Because we know, look, there are two human beings who have ever beaten Patrick Mahomes in a playoff game. Tom Brady, who did it twice. AFC Championship and then Super Bowl, and Joe Burrow, who did it once. And Joe Burrow recently appearing on the Live New Heights podcast where they filled an arena in Cincinnati for this with Jason and Travis Kelce. Joe Burrow was there, and he talked about his success against Travis Kelce's Chiefs. He said, I think we both work really hard. They have great players. We have great players. I think we match up pretty well with them. I think we're built to beat them. I always appreciate the legendary battles we have. Guys are out there always making plays. Patrick is always out there making plays. Both teams have big-time defensive lines. It's a great matchup. And hell, in the AFC Championship game 2022, I remember thinking the Bengals are going to win this.
Yeah, of course.
Until Chris Jones wrecked the game for the Chiefs and shut down what felt like a promising game-winning drive from the Bengals. And then Joseph Asai had that hit right on the sideline that gave the Chiefs an extra 15 yards so Harrison Butker could make the game-winning field goal. I thought the Bengals were going to win that game.
Yeah.
And Joe Burrow healthy, the Bengals can give the Chiefs everything they can handle and then some.
100%. I mean, they are. I mean, Joe's not lying. They are built to beat the Chiefs. You know, they're one of those teams that looked at that and went, wait, this is who we got to conquer. Let's start to measure ourselves off that. And if we measure ourselves against the Chiefs, that should take care of our division and whatever else there. And they do. They got the pieces. I think, like, when you break it down, and, like, at least for me, when I think of a quote like that from Joe Burrow, I go, oh, okay, yeah. I mean, I knew that, right? But then you start to think about the nuance of the situation. Yeah, why exactly do they, right? I know we're going to have to talk about this. You know, and I think there's a few reasons. One, they got a pass rush usually that can get there, like Joe just said, with the D-line, with the front four, and they don't have to blitz if they don't want to, right? They're upset. The first time in the AFC Championship game, or the only time, right? What was the big deal in that game, Mike? Remember the talk? The three-man rush with all the crazy coverages they played behind it. Remember, that was part of the whoa. So Cincinnati has a defensive coach in Lou Anarumo, who is one of the better defensive minds in all of the NFL, who can think outside the box a little bit and do some different things there. So that poses some problems for the Chiefs and what they do. They've been good in the secondary, and then they got a good D-line. You add that with creativity in the calls, you go, well, yeah, that can give the Chiefs problems. We've seen them do that. And then I think you flip it over to the other side of the ball a little, Mike, and we know, hey, Spags and the Chiefs and all they do on defense, right? We talk about that all season long and in the playoffs and what game plan is going to come. Well, Burrow's kind of got that Brady-ish type of, wait, hold on, I'll figure this out. Ooh, block him, check this, blah, 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 we're going to do that, check to that, okay, we're all good. And Steve has a hard time tricking him, let alone they have a true, tried and true system that they can rely on with rules, I think, that can really help them with, oh, wait, it's a crazy blitz, it caught us off guard, but we have rules for this within our West Coast system here to still attack that, and then, of course, they execute it with really damn good players. And I think that's why they give the Chiefs all they can handle as far as that's concerned, Mike.
The key for Burrow going forward is finding ways to avoid injury. He had that unavoidable ACL tear his rookie year in November, came back from it good as new 2021, led the Bengals to the Super Bowl, and then had the wrist thing last year. You know, when Tom Brady, one of the big takeaways from the Dynasty series that has created plenty of blowback for how Bill Belichick was portrayed, and I think
It seems like Kraft and Brady made it, and it's like they made it together to, like, crap on Bill Belichick. That's what it seems like. I mean, yeah.
It Even if that may not be the truth, it sure feels
what everybody
that
says.
Way. There was a way to settle scores. It was a way to to be pro-Kraft, pro-Brady, anti-Belichick, some Shakespearean stuff that goes back 20 years potentially. But Brady, after he tore his ACL in 2008, that's when he made that hard pivot to TB12 and pliability and extending his career and avoiding major injuries. And, you know, some of it is just dumb luck. But as I say all the time, Chris, when you have a team that has a cluster of injuries and it happens year after year after year, at some point it's not dumb luck.
Yeah.
At some point it's nutrition. At some point it's flexibility. At some point it's weight training. At some point you're doing something wrong. I've been saying about the Chargers for years.
Right.
Something's wrong there that all these guys are getting injured because, you know, 1 year, okay, bad luck. 2 years, maybe not. 3 years, you got something wrong with what you're doing. Because I've said this before. When Rodney Harrison used to sit next to me in the NBC viewing room, his superpower is to watch 9 games at once and instantly spot the potentially serious injury in any one of the games as it happens, which would cause him to slam his palm into my chest and say, look at this. And you'd see this guy get twisted up in knots, and he pops right up, and he's fine. It's like, how does that happen? Well, some teams know how to make their guys basically as flexible as Gumby, where they go out there, and it helps to be young too, but they go out there and they get, you would think, the ACL torn and they're up and they're fine. So I think that, back to my point, Joe Burrow.
Yeah, he's got to figure that out.
Needs to ask himself,
right.
Is if I just been bad luck E? Have I been unlucky? I was trying to figure out.
I like that, though. That was bad luck-y.
Have I been bad lucky?
Don't forget unlucky.
God.
Let's go bad lucky. That's a Florioism. Welcome to the club, slugger. Is that bad lucky? Are you 2.5 years oldie? Do you need your bottle, too?
I've made you better. I mean, you've been ripping off all these great words lately, thanks to my influence, and you're dragging me down, man. So can Joe Burrow stop being bad lucky? Is it a matter of bad lucky, or is it he needs to go out and hire Alex Guerrero? I don't know, but that's the one impediment, because when you have this New Year's Eve showdown that we anticipated last year go sideways because Joe Burrow suffered a season-ending injury en route to the New Year's Eve showdown with the Kansas City Chiefs, yeah, we're going to have great regular season games and possibly great playoff games that don't happen if one of the two quarterbacks isn't able to show up. And I'm not saying he's injury-prone. I'm just saying from his perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
got to figure it out.
What? 4 years into his career.
Yeah.
He's only 4 years into his career.
Yeah.
Is this an issue of bad luck? Or is it that there's something that he needs to be doing differently? Or is it something the Bengals need to be doing differently?
Yeah.
You know, is there something going on there? Right. I don't know. But if he's as conscious and conscientious and aware of everything around him, I would think that that's going to be one of his major items going forward. How do I avoid these injuries so I can be in these big games, in these moments, and lead the Bengals to a Super Bowl and finally win one?
I feel like, you know, the word you use, conscientious, right? Like, I feel like he's as conscious of his place, what he is, you know, leading an organization, giving it confidence. I feel like, you know, he and Mahomes might be the leaders in the NFL in that department right there, right? You know, making adjustments to their own game, whatever they got to do physically to be better. I mean, you know, I had a conversation with Joe, right? He's the first pick of the draft. He went there. He got done with 1 year. He went, wait, I'm a conscientious person. I got to change the way I throw. I'm in the AFC North. It's windy. I'm not cutting the ball through these cold, windy days like I know I should be able to, or some of these other quarterbacks. Let me adjust my mechanics. All right, well, here's another challenge, and you're right. I mean, I think he's got to tinker with it regardless. Now, the Bengals have to help him, right? Now, this is to me part of it. So he has the pulled calf muscle to start training camp, right? That's certainly something on him, because that's the start of camp, and he's got to make sure he's ready to go and loose and whatever else there, right? But I think when we really think about it, and this has been a problem in Cincinnati, whether he tears his ACL and a year where they threw the ball his rookie year a lot, right, and put a lot on his shoulders, and he got killed. Protection has been a problem there in Cincinnati, right? They've gotten it right at the end of the year, you know, the last 3 years. But again, we can't forget, even early on in this past season, it was all over the place the first few weeks. They were inept on offense. They couldn't figure things out. And then when Burrow got hurt in Baltimore with the wrist injury, they were in, wait, we figured it out. Watch out. We're about to go in a run mode. And, of course, that happened and hurt, and that hurt their chances of doing that. But, you know, I think it's a little bit of him, Mike, to your point, and adjusting things there. And then they got their O-line's got to play better early in the year so he's not beat to crap the way he's been beaten so far early in his young career.
It is amazing to see how he just stands in there. And he's fearless. I remember his rookie year, he was getting banged around. I talked to him a couple of times, and, you know, his mom was worried about him, and eventually he had that knee caved in. But he will do whatever needs to be done. But that was one of his bigger picture concerns when he redid the deal with the Bengals. Are they going to have enough help around him, especially on the offensive line? Gets back to T. Higgins. How much can they afford to devote to the receiver position when you need to have a great offensive line to get the most out of your quarterback, because receivers are going to come and go throughout this 15-year arc of Joe Burrow's career, and I think the Bengals know that, and T. Higgins is probably going to be the first one to go after this year. I doubt that they tag him again, and I think it's going to be hard for them to pay him because they got to pay Ja'Marr Chase as well. I mentioned Brandon Ayuk earlier.
Yeah.
Now, we've been monitoring his situation because It's fairly clear, number one, he's not content to play under the fifth-year option of $14.1 million. Number two, it feels like the 49ers would very much like to kick this can for another year so they can hold the band together with George Kittle and Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and Christian McCaffrey and Brock Purdy, who is still 1 year away from even being eligible for a second contract. And I just don't think it's something that Brandon Ayuk is going to willingly and happily do. And we've seen a little bits and pieces, the flirtation with Mike Tomlin on social media. And now the more recent development, Brandon Ayuk unfollows the 49ers on social media amid this consternation about his contract and this question of whether or not he would be available in trade. And look, we've seen this how many times now? This is the way that players send messages without saying something out loud. This whole social media experiment gives people a way to make a statement without making a statement. You can express your unhappiness without expressing anything affirmatively. You just click a button and you're no longer following your team. And how many times does it have to happen before we realize it's real?
Yeah.
You know, there are folks who would like, oh, this is ridiculous. Why are you talking about this? This is stupid. Well, because it is a window into the mindset of a player who is not yet ready to stand up and say, I want out. This is kind of like the
I'm not happy
step.
Right, right.
Yeah, this is the middle step. Right. This is the precursor to saying, I want out.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's dangerous situation there with the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, there's no question. I mean, right, I mean, you said it, right? This is how the people of that generation communicate. That is a clear sign of, like, I'm not happy with the team that drafted me, period, right? Also, he's watching and going, wait, the guy that I sit with every day in the wide receiver room, he did all the same things and got $22 million a year eventually. So maybe I should just do those things too. And Deebo Samuel, it was a lot of the similar type of stuff, right? I mean, it was maybe not the flirting with other coaches and doing that like Brandon Ayuk, but certainly letting it be known he's not happy, the whole thing. He unfollowed the 49ers. He said, right, there was these rumors out there. He didn't want to live in California anymore. All of that stuff started to come out. Right, so Ayuk's seen that, and he's going, wait, that kind of worked for Deebo. Maybe this will work for me. This is the toughest situations for team and player to deal with right here. This is, to me, it's like one of the toughest in all the sport because it's a guy they drafted, like you said earlier, in the 20s, in the first round. He's been good through his career so far, but last year was the first year he had of, like, ooh, top-tier type receiver type play. right? Year before that was 1,000 yards, and it was good, but we weren't, like, going to write home about it and be like, oh, my gosh, Brandon Ayuk's about to be a superstar, right? So he's had, you know, a rookie year that was solid, a second year that was pretty good, a third year where he got 1,000 yards, and then he had a fourth year, contract year, where he clearly had his best year. And where this is tough is, yeah, he's looking at it going, wait, T. Higgins, who's, you know, like you talked about, first off, he's making more money than me, and he was the 33rd pick of the draft. He's going to look at other guys that are making more money than him, and he's going to go, I'm better. But the 49ers are also going to sit there and go, wait, you've had one top-notch year. How much money do you want us to spend on you? How much do you want us to commit to you? We've only seen one year of, like, top-tier, upper echelons type play. So, wait, we're just supposed to open the Brinks truck now just because of that, the one year? What about the 3 years before that that were just, you know, pretty good? How about that? And I think that's where it's going to be toughest here. And I don't know where this goes, but I think Brandon Ayuk seems like he's willing to make it ugly, that's for sure.
Well, one of the things I've said before is that for the teams, they constantly are negotiating deals with players. They do it all the time. They've done it for years. They'll keep doing it for years into the future. The players have very limited opportunities for themselves to go out and get the best possible deal they can. What the 49ers have done in recent years, and teams are always concerned about creating precedents. And my position, and the best, most recent example I can think of is the structural problems with the Vikings' offers to Justin Jefferson and the concern if we would guarantee 3 full years of his salary out of the gates, other players are going to say, I want it too. And the easy response is, go play like Justin Jefferson. Well, the problem for the 49ers, they bent and gave in with Deebo Samuel when he wanted out. They huffed and puffed and eventually gave him the contract. They set the precedent.
And with Nick Bosa, and Brandon, same thing a little.
And they did the same thing with Bosa. He held out and they eventually caved. And with Brandon Ayuk, if the message is, go play like Deebo Samuel, okay, I did. Where's mine? So, you know, they take a hard line, and then they soften because they want the player to be happy. And I think it's this combination of the front office, whether it's Jed York or Parag Marate, you know, they've been very, very adamant about getting contracts done their way. Guarantees don't vest until April 1. They've got a couple of weeks to figure out what they want to do with a guy before they have to make the final decision. Most teams don't push it back that far. I mean, they have all sorts of things that have been to their advantage. Heavy on per game roster bonuses, for example, contractual terms to their advantage. But with Deebo Samuel, you know, they wanted to take a hard line, and I think Kyle Shanahan, the head coach, and or John Lynch, the GM, at the end of the day, said, hey, we kind of need this guy, and they pay him. Nick Bosa, same thing. Hard line. We're not going to do it. And then, you know, we kind of need this guy if we want to win a Super Bowl, and they pay him. And I think they're going to go through the same thing with Brandon Ayuk, but they're going to make him go through some of the same steps. They're not just going to throw the money at him. So this is a product of the way the 49ers handled Samuel and Bosa. So Ayuk has to be willing to go through these steps to have a chance to get what he's looking for from the 49ers.
Yeah.
And just do it. Just do it. The blueprint's out there. They've given you the blueprint with Deebo Samuel and Nick Bosa. Now Brandon Ayuk needs to do it. Step one, unfollow them on social media. So I support it.
Yeah,
because that's
I
his path
you.
To getting his fair payday.
Yeah, no, I support it too. I'm always in favor of the player doing whatever they got to do to make it happen to get, you know, maximize their money for sure. I think what we're saying, though, is we certainly can understand the 49ers' position, right? And I think you look at the 49ers too, but they got to worry about a little bit here is, you know, dancing or falling into L.A. Ramville here. And what I mean by that is, like, having a team that's so top-heavy and having no depth and maybe being in salary cap purgatory here sometime in the near future if they don't watch out about it a little bit. You know, like we said last week, I believe, I mean, again, it's the highest paid running back in football. It's one of the highest paid left tackles in football. Deebo's, you said, top three or four at wide receiver already on their team. Now the other receiver wants that type of money too, and then they're playing George Kittle as one of the top three tight ends in football too, and then you're paying Nick Bosa, you know, significantly more than anybody else in football is making on the defensive side of the ball. And Fred Warner's the highest paid middle linebacker, like other than Roquan Smith. It's that's where they got to worry about. The 49ers are a little bit in this transition of, wait, I want to keep the band together, like you said, for one more year or as long as we can here because we have a Super Bowl team. But at the same time, you might risk how good you are 2 or 3 years from now, too. And that's where that's the reality of salary cap current day NFL football. And that's where they're going to have to figure this out. But that's where it's going to be tough. And also Ayuk, Mike, on top of that, he's got the 49ers a little bit, you know, as far as they need him. The playoffs exposed Deebo Samuel a little bit. We love Deebo, right? He's awesome. When he's catching screens and reverses and toss sweeps, he's the man. And we go, ooh, wow, whoa, my gosh. And he gives them an attitude. But we saw in the playoffs, right, that when it's a team that can play man-to-man, has got some good cover corners, and if they can't get Deebo going on the reverses and the speed sweeps and all that, he does not separate from good man-to-man corners. And then that's where they have to rely on Ayuk. And that's where the 49ers are definitely in a little conundrum right now with this situation.
And look, what happens is, I'm trying to choose my words carefully here. Once there is a tangible item of evidence,
yeah,
like Brandon Ayuk unfollowing the 49ers on social media,
right,
that is when you will see people who are actually reporters, people who want to be reporters, people who are pretending to be reporters, random X bot accounts. They feel like bot accounts, but I guess they're not. That's when people start chiming in and trying to push it to the next level. And there was, from one of these, who the fook is that guy, to quote, what's his name? Conor McGregor. One of these, like, I don't know who this person is, but here's a post on X. The item came out yesterday, and it says as follows: Brandon Ayuk, guy named John Frisella. John, I don't know you, but maybe I do now, and maybe that was your goal. If so, congratulations. Brandon Ayuk has officially requested a trade from the 49ers per confirmation from my San Francisco source. See, when I see something phrased that way, Chris, all due respect to this guy, that's just not the way
it's not even the way you would say it. Right, exactly.
It's not the way you would say it.
Right.
It's like, this is my approximation based upon
per
what
confirmation
read
from my San Francisco source, like, that's under the, like, radar per confirming this is the source.
But, you know, it's like when in Rome, like, if you want to be taken remotely seriously, you have to at least use lingo that feels like the stuff you see from the people who actually do it. And for all I know, this guy is right on the money. We're going to talk more about what he had to report, because when you click on the show more button, and we're getting to Ryan Williams, and you'll see at the top of the screen what he said. Ryan Williams represents Brandon Ayuk. So we'll get to that. I want to explore the rest of what John Frisella has said. As of Sunday morning, April 14, the Steelers have been the most aggressive in pursuing a trade for Ayuk, with the Ravens also expressing interest. Now, I can tell you this, because I had another reason last night to like scratch on this a little bit and try to get some information. The Steelers haven't been aggressive lately. The Steelers might have made a phone call 6 or 7 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we're told he's not available, and that was that. Now, that might change in the coming days now that Brandon Ayuk has unfollowed the 49ers.
Right.
It might prompt another phone call. Hey, is your guy still unavailable or no? But my understanding is the 49ers received a communication from the Steelers 6 or 7 weeks ago, and they said he's not available. So to say the Steelers have been the most aggressive in pursuing a trade, that's not true. A phone call was made 6 or 7 weeks ago. Is your guy available? No, he's not. End of conversation. No further conversations since then.
Very aggressive.
So that part's just wrong.
Right.
That part's just wrong.
Right.
Just flat out wrong. Confirmed it last night, 100%. Trust my source. Without a doubt, a call was made 6 or 7 weeks ago.
That was per confirmed sources? You got that from?
That was. So let me get it right. Let me get it right. When in Rome. let me get it right. The Pittsburgh Steelers have not been aggressive in pursuing a trade for Brandon Ayuk per confirmation from my San Francisco or Pittsburgh or elsewhere source. I don't want to out my source, so I'm going to keep it very general. All right. Now, this all prompted the response from Ryan Williams, the agent for Brandon Ayuk. You saw it earlier on the screen. They can put it back up. You need better sources. And technically, he's right, because this guy is kind of wrong pew, but maybe the right church. because you know what happens is, as you know, I don't need to like recite our credentials or anything, but everybody with every team, everybody in any position of power is reading PFT all the time. It's a fact. It's just a fact. I know that the haters out there don't want to hear it, or they think I'm blowing my baby. Chris, you know, it's a fact. So when a story like this gets posted, I hear from people who know things, who say, I'm not so sure that that denial from the agent is 100% accurate. And I'm still working this, but I got reason to think that there's some stuff going on.
Yes, right.
Something's going on. Now, right. John Frisella, with his per confirmation from my San Francisco source, right church, wrong pew. And it's easy to say you need better sources if you're in the wrong pew. But, and this is where I give John Frisella a little bit of a bouquet. He's on to something. Even though it's clumsy and it's clunky and it's technically inaccurate for reasons we've already discussed, he's on to something. Because something is going on. Now, obviously, Brandon Ayuk has unfollowed the 49ers. Something is going on. But, stay tuned as we approach the draft. Because there is something happening. I don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
The Steelers are not aggressively pursuing a trade. And I don't know if the Ravens have expressed interest, but
it would make sense.
There is something going on.
Yeah.
There is something going on.
It would make sense for both of those teams to be interested. You know, it would be. I mean, again, you know, it's like, hey, well, you know, we talk about it all the time. They both need receivers, right? Let's try to get one right now that's a proven commodity instead of like, oh, we're going to go in the draft and we hope we hit it right or get the guys that are left that we like. So that I understand, right? We know the Steelers are definitely a little low on top receiving options as is anyways there right now. And Baltimore's probably a little worried in the fact that they got a pretty good group, right? It's Zay Flowers, it's Nelson Aguilar, right? But Rashad Bateman,
every time I hear that guy's name, I think of catching babies.
But Rashad Bateman can't stay healthy. He's one of those guys that's got to evaluate himself. So they're looking for that. But I think, again, Mike, yeah, I'm not shocked to hear this or think that's going on. You know, again, it's one of those where it has the feel of a little bit like kind of what I was saying last week. A little bit of the team maybe going, hey, go out there and see what's out there then. If you don't like our offer, here it is. And then the agent and the player are kind of trying to, hey, they don't want to make it look like, hey, we definitely want to leave town and we don't like the Niners. So they're trying to, you know, massage the effort here and still make the player look good. But like by all due accounts or to my, you know, what my pasta and meatballs tell me as far as like, yeah, is Brandon Ayuk out there and his agent searching a little bit, feeling what maybe they could get and the Niners could get and what their contract. I think definitely. I think it's the right thing for the 49ers to do to kind of appeal or appease his appetite for what he thinks he's supposed to get. Back to our A.J. Brown conversation. Again, a lot of these guys are asking for A.J. Brown money, and I think these teams are going, you're not A.J. Brown. Welcome to you're not A.J. Brown. And A.J. Brown got a 16 pick in the draft, and that team was like, we'll pay him top of the market money. And I think that's what these teams got to do, CeeDee Lamb and the Cowboys included, to go show me somebody else out there that's going to give you that, and then we'll start to think about that on our own end.
So, to the extent that John Frisella Football said Brandon Ayuk has officially requested a trade from the 49ers per confirmation from my San Francisco source, that's false. He hasn't asked for a trade. But, Chris, I was touching my nose a couple of times while you were saying what you were saying.
I know, yeah.
The truth of the matter very well may be that this process has commenced of Ayuk's agent having the ability to contact other teams.
Exactly.
And find out
that's what
whether
I would
or not
expect.
There's even any interest in doing a deal.
Right.
I mentioned T. Higgins earlier. We talked about him.
Yes.
When it came out that he wanted out of Cincinnati, nobody called the Bengals. So if we're going to use this as some sort of a litmus test to figure out what Brandon Ayuk is worth in the eyes of other teams so he can set his value and his expectations as it relates to the 49ers, this is how you do it. It's very discreet. It's not, I've demanded a trade, because at the end of the day, you're going to be staying put. And Deebo Samuel had to push it to the point where, you know, he's doing this. There's the sign. Deebo Samuel will be a 49er this year, and he's doing this in the club. Like, Ayuk apparently doesn't want to push it to that level yet. Maybe he will. But for now, there is an exploration happening. And I think what it will do, Chris, is a practical matter. There's enough smoke right now that I predict at some point this week the Steelers will pick up the phone and they'll call the 49ers and say, has your situation changed?
I think so.
Have your circumstances been altered to the point where there's a reason for us to have a conversation?
Yeah, I would expect the Niners phone to start ringing this week, right? I think this is the week, the weekend that just went by where teams are starting to, you know, fortify and figure out their draft plans a little bit and figure out, wait, we're here, we need this, we actually might not get what we want here, oh no, right? They're starting to get a better feel for that. It's all coming together in a lot of these front offices as far as in that manner over the next 10 to 12 days before the draft, to where now these teams that go, ah, man, we might be in a spot where we can't get a receiver that helps us. Ooh, who can we call out there that maybe can, you know, help us out and trade us a wide receiver that makes sense? So that's where I would expect Ayuk to happen. The big thing to me, and I, you know, again, I have no knowledge of this, is just what is Ayuk asking for, right? What is it asking for? If he's asking for top tier in the market, like, type of money, I have a hard time believing he's going to get that done. Right. But that's what I feel like is being asked. So just in my heart there. And then, gosh, if he's asking for 17 or 18 million a year, I feel like the 49ers would probably pay him that. I mean, we know the Niners and Shanahan like Brandon Ayuk. That's for sure. But there's obviously a difference in what the value of the player is at right now between the two.
I think he's got every right to ask for what Deebo Samuel is
getting. I hear you there. Right. Right.
And look at our article for what he's actually getting. That's the key.
Yeah.
And regardless, at the end of the day, it will look better. That's what it does. Brandon Ayuk's new contract will look better than whatever it is. But when you compare apples to apples, I think he wants to compare himself to Deebo Samuel. They're telling me to break. This is one of those days where it's like, what are we going to talk about? And we've already gone for 1 hour in the first segment. Our good friend Deb, loyal viewer, had this to say about your Tiger Woods rant. Watching Tiger constantly at the Masters is like having the Cowboys shoved down our throats constantly, even though they haven't been good.
Yeah, Deb. That's right, Deb. I like it, Deb. That's right. I know. Hey, here's the 10 greatest people in the sport. Watch the worst one in the playing today. And we're just going to shove them down your throat. Great. I didn't tune in to watch him. I tuned in a lot 15 years ago. It's over. See you later. Move on with life. Show me every now and then. Let's go. I like Deb a lot. Thanks, Deb. Thanks for contributing.
Coming soon, the NFL 2024 regular season schedule with 5 games on NBC, and we'll be very happy to get them. Let's take a break. More PFT Live right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.